did a great introduction of what the problem is with methylbromide. Methylbromide is so effective that there was basically no alternative to methylbromide. All the flour mills basically were using methylbromide in Canada, in the U.S., and in Europe. And so in 1995, when they said you got to get rid of methylbromide, they started to go, what? You know, they started, it was a shockwave that went through the industry that really started to hit home when they actually had to get rid of the methylbromide. So today I'm just going to share the experiences that we've had in Canada dealing with the loss of methylbromide and some of the alternatives that we've been trying. So I'll just give an overview of how I approach this, looking at these various alternatives in flour mills. Then going to go and take a look at, we did take a look at several methylbromide fumigations to get an idea of how effective methylbromide was. And then we took a look at sulfur fluoride profume was recently registered in Canada, and we did a number of fumigations with that. And then the phosphine heat CO2, which was developed by David Miller, we've been trying that out in Canada. Onto heat, which has been used for many years in Quaker oats, but hasn't really been used in flour mills. And then finally, to give a summary of how effective these measures were. Dave gave a very good overview of what the problem was with the ozone hole. This is just a dynamic presentation of basically the ozone layer is about 20 kilometers up, planes fly out here, and every fall it disappears because of the catalytic conversion of ozone because of the CFCs and methylbromide. And 2005, methylbromide was banned, and there was a critical use exemptions that were allowed. If you could show, I really, really need this. You know, I can't, my business is going to fall apart. And so they were able to have methylbromide, and they had to apply for it every year. And there has been, this is the request by the Canadian National Millers Association, and this is what they got. And so this has been going down over the years. And so this is basically sort of woke up to them, well, you're not going to have methylbromide. We've got to work together to take a look at this. And so there's a couple of projects that I was involved in with the Canadian Millers and with some funding from Agriculture Canada and some funding from industry to take a look at these alternatives. We took a look at seven methylbromide fumigations. You go, hey, this is alternatives to methylbromide. Why are you looking at methylbromide? Well, I wanted to compare methylbromide with the alternatives. Go in and you turn over every roll stand and you're going to find insects. And so we basically want to do the same evaluations with methylbromide as we did with the alternatives. We did seven methylbromide fumigations, four sulfur fluoride, a couple of phosphine, several heat treatments, an IPM sanitation, which I'm not going to go into. And we did this across the Canada with a number of companies and a number of pest control providers. I'm just putting this in here because to take a look at the differences between these fumigants. Sulfur fluoride, if you take a look at this is the CT, the amount of gas or time, gas times time to kill the insect. And as well known, the egg stage is the most resistant stage for sulfur fluoride. For methylbromide, it is the pupal stage. And then get down here for phosphine, for those people in the back who can't see, it is again the egg stage. So you want to kill things, you want to kill all the stages, you have to kill the most resistant stage. We took a look at a number of ways of measuring efficacy for these different trials. We took a look at, we put insects in a vial. It's actually quite easy to kill insects in vials. We had adults, and then we put the adults in for 1 week before they would lay eggs, about 100 eggs. We would have controls to take a look afterwards. We would put the vials out into the facility, about 25, pull them out afterwards, sieve out, count the number of live and dead adults, and then we would hold those vials for 5 weeks and take a look at the offspring. So that gives it, here we have both exposures of eggs and adults at the same time in a relatively simple way. No, that we didn't have any pupa. Pupa don't last very long. They're a lot of work to get a hold of, so we're not really testing the most resistant stage for methylbromide. We also used Mike Mullen's trap, this dome trap. It has a pheromone, it's a lure. It basically gives some idea of the number of insects within the facility. Then we took a look at the Rebolt sifter tailings. They do one final sifting in these flour mills to get out all the crap, including the insects, and they will count those insects to get an idea of how many insects are within the mill stream. Methylbromide is very good. Anything with a mitochondria, it'll kill. So it'll kill pathogens, weeds, insects, rodents. Does a very good job at killing these things. It's non-corrosive, non-flammable. The millers know how it works. It's very good, insurance, very rapid. We took a look at this. This is the data with the vials, the various mills. They're numbered here. Methylbromide treatment. This is concentration time. So how much gas was in there? And if these structures are very leaky, then that half loss time goes is very, very low. They lose the gas, and the CT is very low, and it's not very effective. So this is these are the levels. These are relatively high levels for methylbromide. Look at, you know, they killed all the adults, and they pretty much killed all the larvae, the immatures, which are mainly eggs, except for this one case here. Methylbromide does a great job. We also measured the gas to take a look at how much gas there was. It drops down over time. If it have a better half-loss time, it goes down like this. If it worse half-loss time, it goes down like that. And so we get an idea of how much gas over the time it was. Take a look at, now this is the rebound. We killed all the insects in the vial, so there should never be more insects in this in mill, right? We got them all. For some reason, they always come back. Where they come from, I don't know. The millers don't know, but they always come back. And so this is, this is 100%. This is not 100 insects per trap. This is 100% of pre-treatment. So whether they had 2 insects or 20 insects per trap, we just equalized them all to 100%, which we're looking at when do they come back up to this line. So the blue line here, mill 6, they were back up after 5 weeks. Take a look at, let's say, the mill in the red here. Very low. There was a little spike here, and it never really came back up after the 20 weeks. The mill in the yellow here, they were back up after 25 weeks. So we get an idea of how long it takes for these mills to come back. Yes, Christian?
Is this just flower beetles, or is this everything?
It's red flower beetles.
Okay.
And it could be red or confused. Sometimes there is a mix, mainly red flower beetles, Tribolium castaneum. And that's the major insect within these facilities. Let's take a look at sulfur-4. This is Paul Foran setting up some of the tanks before one of these fumigations. Take a look at sulfur-4. Sulfur-4 is unique is that they can have 2 concentrations. A low concentration that kills everything but eggs, and then a high concentration that will kill all life stages. So this is the low concentration that was tried initially in December in Canada. And there was, as expected, some survival of the immatures. You get into these higher concentrations and you knock down the number of the survival of the immatures or the eggs. Take a look at the amount of gas that was involved in this. And with sulfur-4, often what they'll do, they have a computer program that says you're not going to make your CT, your concentration, so you got to add more gas. And so they can bump up this gas during the fumigation if they need it. Take a look at, you know, why there was that differential survival. And the question, and the problem is heat. If you have a low temperature, this was December in Canada. Remember, it's a little cold up in Canada in December. And so inside the mill, some of those places were only around 16 degrees Celsius, and they had very low survival, low mortality. If you get higher temperatures, you know, up around 28, there is very high mortality. So the question of survival, you can, if you get enough heat in these mills, and David Miller has shown this with a number of his fumigations, you get enough heat with sulfur-4, it's going to work a lot better. Take a look at these various mills for sulfur-4. Again, same thing, trap catches of red flower beetle bop down. And with about, we did 4 of these mills. One of these mills, 2 of these mills, basically they had, after about, you know, 10 to 15 weeks, explosions. Large number of insects back into the mill. This is with the mill 8 here, the mill 4 you can see. There's large, even the second mill, the second fumigation here in the red here with mill 4 at the high concentrations, there's a rebound. But I'll get into that later, the differences between the trap catches and the rebolt sifter tailing. Take a look at the phosphine heat and carbon dioxide. A technique that was developed by David Miller. But with phosphine, it's corrosive, and it takes time. Phosphine, if you give it enough time, it's going to work. But it takes a lot of time. And so farm millers, if they can run that mill, they want to run it. And so they want to get that fumigation done within the weekend. So they've developed this technique, carbon dioxide at 3 to 6%. You heat up the mill. Every fumigant works better with heat. Lower the phosphine concentration down to 100 ppm so there's the corrosion is less of an issue. EcoFume is probably the best way to, this is cylinderized phosphine at 2% phosphine. And then you take the sensitive equipment, the equipment that has these connections that you're worried about corrosion, you remove them from the mill, and if you can't remove it, you bag it and you put positive pressure on it. You take a look at the gases that are added during, and there's always, they're aiming for about 100 ppm. And so they'll add a little bit. This is the phosphine concentration added in about every couple hours to maintain not too high, not too low. So there's a constant addition of the phosphine with the EcoFume in a gaseous form, which is the easiest way to do that. A lot harder to do with magnesium phosphide. That's what David Miller uses initially, but a lot more difficult to with these solid phosphides. So you just bag your computer equipment here. To prevent gas from getting in, you put a positive pressure in. There's always compressed air in these facilities, so you add the gas in. It pops out. There's always a little gas leaking out so the phosphine doesn't get in and fry your computer. You can also do this with equipment. You seal it up, add a line with pressurized air, and then you take a line out of here to see if there's gas inside and if there's going to be a problem. There is corrosion. These are these copper strips that are put out into the facility to see if there's corrosion. You weigh them before, you weigh them after, you get an idea. This blackening is the corrosion or the oxidation, and that happens. But with all these mills, there was really no damage to the equipment. There was the odd ballast that went. We don't know if that was due to the heat or due to the corrosion. But these mills were up and running with no problems due to corrosion. Take a look at the number of insects in these vials. This was a unique situation where they had a packing plant and a mill. And the packing plant was done with heat phosphine CO2, and the mill was done with methylbromide. And the next year we switched them around, and we took a look at the mill was done with the other product, and the packing plant was done with the other product. And so we were able to take a look in the same facility, do fumigations simultaneously at with different fumigants, and then switch them over the next time we did it and take a look at the insects in the facility. Killed everything pretty much. There was some survival with the matures with the phosphine heat CO2, but not as bad as the sulfur fluoride. The colors are specific for the fumigant here. So the mill B was actually the packing plant. The mill A was the mill. And so one time it was done with the packing plant, one time it was done with the phosphine. And so we take a look here, and if anything, the methylbromide was, the insects were coming back faster in the methylbromide treated, this was mill A, the mill, than they were with the phosphine. So pretty much the same thing with methylbromide or with the phosphine heat CO2, with the trapping of the insects coming back up. So let's take a look at heat. Heat has been used for a number of years by Quaker Oats and by Purina as a way of killing these insects within all these facilities that used heat about 10 years ago had heat within the facility, big boilers. It's pretty simple. Insects, if you get them up to 50 degrees Celsius, they die off quite quickly. It's been used for a number of years in the U.S. and Canada, so it's not something that's, something that's coming out of the lab. They need to make spec the equipment in there to be heat tolerant, but they can do that. They can cost it a little more, but they can get the equipment that is tolerant. And it's done by the personnel usually, then rather than the say a PCO coming in. You need a heat source, obviously, but they don't have to seal up the facility the same way you do with a fumigation. Just basically close the doors, seal it up a bit, and start the heat. We took a look at two, because most of these flour mills don't have boilers for processing. They have to bring a heat source in. We looked at two heat sources. One, we looked at the temp air. This is a, basically they have these large heaters with propane fired. The hot air comes in, it's blown in, it pressurizes the building, and so there's This is the propane tanks that are here. And we did three heat treatments with Temp-Air. We also took a look at portable heaters. These are facilities that have steam boilers or portable steam boilers that you can bring on site. And you just put these heaters into the facility and heat it up with these temporary portable heaters. We did two like that. So the forced air is the Temp-Air ones. These are the steam heat. Temperatures, these are maximum average temperatures. We took 25 locations throughout the facility. And they get pretty warm in there. You need to get it warm to get all these nooks and crannies throughout the facility heated up. Pretty good control of the adults with the forced air. There was some survival in these localized areas with the steam heat. Again, a bit of survival with the immatures. We take a look at the temperature. Temperature is crucial for this stuff. This is with some of the forced air. You want to get it up about 50 degrees C for 24 hours. There you see the good control. With one of the steam heats, these guys, there's always a fight between quality and production. Production wanted this mill back as soon as possible. They wanted to have it back within 22 hours of when they shut down. Usually it's 48 hours, you know. And they paid the price of not having enough heat. And they weren't able to get kill all the insects within the facility. They've gone on and used this within this particular facility, and they've refined the technique. Part of the problem with heating a flour mill is it doesn't heat up uniformly. You've got to get heat is basically your fumigant, what you're going to kill. And this is there's a hopper here with some wheat. This is the floor, some metal here. This is the temperature. This, we take a look at an infrared photograph, and you see it's pretty much all the same temperature here, around 19 degrees. You start heating it up 1 hour here. Here you see this wheat's not heating up, but the floor is doing heating up to about 40 degrees Celsius. Here at 3 hours, again, that's cool here, but it's warm there. And here you go at 4.5 hours. All this is above 50 degrees, so everything here is going to be dead, but if there's an insect on the edge here, it's going to be surviving. So you've got to get the heat distributed around to kill off these insects. You need a lot of air circulation within the facility to make sure that heat gets out and around. Take a look at the rebound for the traps here, and we see basically heat treatment did a great job. There's really no rebound from these various mills. The millers were quite happy with it. The problem with insects is they know that it's getting hot and they run from the heat. That's not the case with the fumigants. They're going to sit there. They don't know what's happening. So these insects will run away from the heat, and this was a mop that was left in there, and all the insects had run underneath the mop to get away from it, but they eventually did get killed. But if there's a cool spot, they'll run to it and they'll find it, and they'll get away from it. Let's just take a look at a summary. Most of the insects were killed in the bioassays. It's pretty easy to kill these insects in vials. One of the heat trials only had 94% mortality, but they could have got around that if they kept the heat up long enough. SF egg mortality is a problem, and it ranged anywhere from 35 to 99% mortality. If you get it high enough for long enough and with warm enough, you can deal with the eggs. Take a look at the rebound here, and this is the rebound to 100%. And so this is the heat treatment. It was over 20 weeks. There was some problems with the SF where the rebound was as little as a few weeks to 10 weeks, or it can be as high as 20 weeks. This is the methylbromide lasting over 25 weeks. But there is the odd case where you get a bad fumigation with methylbromide. Look at the tailings. And similar sort of trends, though not always the same story with the tailings and the Rebold sifter tailings and the traps. But you get about anywhere from 5 to 25 weeks with the tailings before they come back up. One thing that I noticed as some studies done in the U.S. is you have much better, tighter mills here for fumigation, and that you can, if they could increase the half-loss time or increase the temperature, we're going to get better fumigations in Canada. The problem with this is there's no replication. You basically don't have three mills. You've got a mill today, and you've got a mill in 6 months, and that mill, although it's the same mill, may be a different mill with different insect pressure. So there's some problems with the replication for this. But all these mills, they didn't do another methyl bromide remediation 2 weeks afterwards. These were the alternatives that worked for them. They didn't have to replace it, methyl bromide. They reused these as alternatives to methyl bromide. A lot of people helped us with this, and you can read this online if you want. And with that, I'll conclude.